And now, SCORE senior football analyst Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Indeed, I know him. He's Hub Arkish. This is The Score. He joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois, NFL's senior analyst for The Score. He's Hub. Hub, how are you? Welcome.
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I am groovy. That's how I am. I could be bitching by the end of the night. That's how it's we all want to be trending up, right? That's what it is. And Caleb Williams is trending up. Don't we see that? Don't we think that? Whatever the numbers say, trending up game to game?
Well, he's definitely improved each of the last 2 weeks. I think he's probably been a little better each week. I think that overall, where they're at going in, to week six, I think that he's been pretty impressive so far with the way he's handling everything.
So the news from London earlier was sort of suspected it, but Brad Biggs had tweeted out that the Bears have elevated cornerback Amir Speed and safety Tavarius Moore from the practice squad for Sunday's game against the Jaguars. Speed will provide depth with starter Tyreek Stevenson, doubtful with a calf injury, and Jalen Jones a good bet to start in his place. That was Brad Biggs at the Tribune and the Score tweeting that out. So the secondary, probably the strongest part of a good Bears defense when this season started, is suddenly without Jaquan Brisker. Had it been without Terrell Smith, now without Tyreek Stevenson. And so without those players, and with elevating some of these players and some difficulty stopping the run against a team that has the worst defense than that the Bears should be able to take advantage of, but also has an offense with the greatest number of 50-yard plays. What happens? What does this do to the secondary? How does this change the game plan, or what kind of game plan do you expect to see from the Bears defense on Sunday?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to change the game plan all that much. They just have to hope that these backups can come in and perform. They may take a few less risks. They may possibly, pass rush a little bit more, maybe send more extra rushers to try and not give the defensive backs as long to have to cover the backfield. But for the most part, I don't think you really change the game plan. You just hope that you've got these backups ready and that they, don't make any big mistakes.
It had been brought up this week that this would be a good time for a Montez Sweat game. And people went, well, where is Montez Sweat? Two sacks in five games. And, well, that doesn't average out. That's not what we're looking for. And he was talking this week, sometimes around a story about the way he's looked at the TJ Watts and Myles Garrett. And what do these guys do when they're getting chipped and double teamed, triple teamed, when they're getting hit, when they're not able to. You're not getting a free run unless you're Andrew Billings, and then nobody's going to block you when you get a sack. But that's not going to happen to Montez Sweat. So what do you make of his season, and is this the kind of game where he does have a Montez Sweat game and covers whatever shortcomings there are in the secondary?
Well, I think when you study, both his stats and the film, Montez Sweat has played pretty well. I mean, he hasn't been great, but he has played pretty well. He just hasn't gotten the sacks. He's making other plays. He's played well against the run. He's created pressure. He's causing teams, to double and sometimes even triple team him to go after others. And the Bears are, way ahead through 5 weeks with 14 sacks of where they were a year ago. So, the focus is going to be on Sweat. He's your $100 million guy. And you do want to see him get to the quarterback more often. But at the same time, I don't think you can be too negative about the way he's played. So, and you're not being negative. But I mean, I think you can ask for that much more than the way he's played so far. Except, obviously you want more sacks. You expect him to be a double-digit sack guy. And he has to find a way to get by this extra, coverage in these double teams and get to the quarterback. But for the most part, you also have to add in, that's why some of these guys that you've never heard of before are suddenly getting sacks. That's why they've got 14 sacks. So the pass rush is working better. It's just that Montez Sweat's contribution to that hasn't been quite what you'd expect.
Hub Arkers is my guest. He is the senior NFL analyst for The Score. We do this almost every week on Saturday Suckage. We're talking Bears and Jaguars. So Trevor Lawrence is just, you know, what do you call it, capricious or whimsical or wildly inconsistent. I don't know. Last week he had what a game, and before that, what is he doing? That kind of stuff. So what do you expect? What do you know? What do you think this week with Trevor Lawrence and the Bears defense?
You know, he concerns me a little bit because he is a very good football player. He's a very good passer, and this is not a week where you want to have a couple starters out in the secondary, you know. But that said, he's also one of the great mysteries in the league to me because I've been waiting for the last two and a half years now for him to finally emerge as one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. That's what I've always expected him to be since they drafted him with the number one overall pick. And after a fairly normal first year or two where he showed a lot of signs of being that guy but couldn't get consistent with it, he definitely has been going backwards in the last year and a half or two. Now, he's had some injuries. There's no question about that. But from week to week, we haven't been sure of what we're going to see. So you know the talent is there. You know he can make the big plays. You know that they've been a 9-8 teams each of the last 2 years. So, you know, even though they got off to the 0-4 start this year, they're not a bad football team. But you do, you know, I said you don't necessarily change the plan for your injuries in the secondary, but you do have a special plan for Trevor Lawrence because he is that type of physical talent. He can do those things, you know, that can turn a game, and that's what the defense has to be ready for today.
Hub Arkers is my guest. We're talking Bears-Jaguars here on The Score. They play tomorrow in London, and so it'll be breakfast at Wimbledon. No, it'll be breakfast at the NFL. They'll be doing that on somebody's on a pitch. Somewhere in London, they'll be doing it on a pitch. The improvement in Caleb Williams, I think one of the things that separates him from, I don't want to say coachability, but maybe a quicker grasp, an easier grasp of being a pocket passer compared to Justin Fields. When last we saw a young quarterback try to be forced to become a pocket passer, it looked like Justin Fields was thinking and not reacting. Caleb Williams seems to be able to grasp it, do it, execute it. I've seen that in the last couple of weeks. Have you seen that? Do you think it's important? Has it made a difference in your evaluation of him?
Well, it hasn't made a difference because my evaluation has been, you know, pretty even and more positive than negative from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I would say that what I've really noticed in the last few weeks is that he sees the field, he reads the field, and he knows what his second and third options are. And you can just see that developing, and it's been evolving each week with these last 200-300-yard games. And I think he's there now, and I think that's going to continue. I don't think you're going to see any more 150-yard passing games from Caleb Williams. He is that player. And so what I've really been impressed by is the way he has already, you know, grasped the system, the way he knows what he needs to do and what his options are when that first, you know, when the play is covered, when he's got to go to option two and option three. And he not only is doing that, but he's doing it so quickly. And that's what you're looking for in your number one quarterback. Now, he still has a long way to go, believe me. I'm not anointing him yet. But off what we've seen so far and the way we've seen it growing and how quickly it's growing, I think is pretty impressive.
The weapons were on display last week, as they should be, against a team you should have beaten. If you're the Bears, you should go out there and you should beat up on the Panthers the way you should beat up on the Jaguars. But the weapons were on display. You talk about the way Caleb Williams read the field, and the touchdown pass to DJ Moore was a perfect example of like veteran move, like get the safety to move, then you got your single coverage, nobody's coming over, and all the weapons were on display and all of the abilities were on display of your players. It looked like Shane Waldron had his best game in giving Caleb Williams the options, and Caleb Williams made the right choice more often than not. Fair to say?
Well, yeah, I think that's absolutely fair to say, and I think the reason is fairly obvious. I mean, you know, when they traded for Allen, they already had DJ Moore. You know, they already knew they wanted to take Odunze. They wanted to have those three wide receivers available for their rookie quarterback for him to have lots of targets. Then they added the number two tight end, and then you add, you know, at the running back position. So they put all those parts out there. And last week was the first time that they had a healthy Keenan Allen. They had all three of those receivers together. And I think that's why he looked so comfortable. That's why he produced so much better. And I think if they keep them all healthy, you're going to see that type of play, what you saw last week, not what you saw the first 4 weeks. And it's one of the things that I am impressed by with Williams is he knows how to use them. But, you know, he has to have them all to be able to use them. And so I think the biggest reason for the improvement last week was that they got those targets all on the field together, and he was able to pick and choose.
Hub Arkus is my guest, senior NFL analyst for The Score. We're talking football here on The Score, Bears, Jaguars tomorrow. A little over 24 hours yesterday, Stacey Dales was on The Score with Mully and Haw, as she always is, and she had made mention that Mercedes Lewis had explained that in the course of going to Matt Eberflus and saying, we need to be coached harder, we need changes in the offense, and he said, you need to take that up with Shane Waldron, and they took it up with Shane Waldron, and they all had a come-to-Jesus meeting, that she revealed that Mercedes Lewis said that there was never a scripted group of plays. There wasn't a 15 plays scripted to start, however you want to use them, if you want to use them literally or at least as probing kind of plays of what make a defense react, so you can have in your pocket ideas of where you're going to go going into the game and then see immediately. Were you surprised that Shane Waldron needed to be told to script the first 15 or 20 plays, whatever it is? Are you surprised that he didn't do that to help his quarterback, help his offense?
You know, Steve, I was hosting on the air last night with Mark, and Grody and I, you know, I think agreed on this. We were talking, and we talked about it a lot because it does sound really strange. Stacey Dales is really good. I give nothing negative to say about her reporting. But in this particular case, I think she just explained it wrong or described it wrong. I don't believe that after 3 years as an offensive coordinator in Seattle, that Shane Waldron doesn't know and didn't know that he needed and didn't have a 15 script play or some kind of play. I think it was just the way that she reported it, the way it came out. It may be the way that Lawrence said it. You know, I don't know. But I find it hard to believe that they weren't prepared in that area. Now, if they weren't, it's a terrible mistake, you know, and you have to ask, how can that happen? But I shouldn't say it's a terrible mistake. It's terribly different. And I just, you know, again, it's not like this guy's a first-time offensive coordinator. I can't believe that he went through 3 years in Seattle and never had a 15-play script. And I find it hard to believe that they didn't have his version of that 15-day script, that they weren't using it right. Now, that is quite possible, and that would be on him. But I think we have to be careful in how we accept this information and more importantly, how much we criticize for it.
Well, he didn't really answer that. Brad Biggs tried to pin him down earlier about the script, and he didn't want to answer the question. He claimed it was scheme, which this was after the come to Jesus meeting. So when you claim it's scheme, it's you're doing a good job of protecting yourself from admitting something that might make you look bad, for one thing. It might actually be scheme, but it doesn't sound like it. And she also made the point that she thought, she's drawing a conclusion now as opposed to what she was said was given a hard fact by Mercedes Lewis, she thought that maybe the offensive coordinator thought it was too much to lay on a rookie quarterback, where I would think it would streamline and clarify things. Here are the plays. Here's what we care about. Here's what we're looking for. Here's why we're doing these plays. I think it would be much easier than just going in with vague concepts. So is it believable that he thought, I think wrongly, but that he thought that giving a rookie quarterback those 15 plays or that kind of situation would have been too much?
Well, it certainly is believable as a possibility. I also find it kind of silly. You know, I would think that giving it to him would help keep it simpler for him than possibly making it more difficult. And that's why I've had a hard time with this ever since we started talking about it, because there's so many parts to it. And I'm just not sure what the actual interaction was, you know. And again, we're still at this stage, Steve, where we either want to find everything wrong or we want to find everything right. We can't just accept what we're watching. And I think what we should be looking at is it getting better or is it getting worse? And as it gets better, are we excited about what we see? Now, it's a little too early to be excited, but I think we all agree it's definitely been getting better from weeks 1 through 4. I mean, instead of 0-4, you're 3-2, you know, and that happened with Caleb Williams. It wouldn't have happened with Justin Fields. And so in that regard, the way we're evaluating the team and where they're at so far, I think, is reasonable. And now, we found this kind of strange information that we got. And we're focused on that, I guess, because we're always looking for a better answer. But I don't think it is going to have any impact on whether the team continues to improve or how good they're going to be.
Well, I have reasons to be excited because of the way Caleb Williams' arrow is going to point. And I think that will be there may be wild differences. It may be pointing up and then pointing down. Like, you don't think there's going to be one of those 150-yard games. And they've been playing bad defenses, and they're going to face better defenses. And I would hope you're right. That would show improvement. I love the way the Bears' schedule breaks down. This is like the longest preseason schedule before you get to the division games, and which really matter, and there are some good defenses there. And then you'll have wanted all the experience you can get. The Bears couldn't have set it up any better. But factoring in it's an NFL defense, but it's a bad NFL defense, and he's going to see it again this week. I'm willing to take, okay, the arrow's pointing up against bad teams. You do to bad teams what you're supposed to do. And that's a positive thing. I can get excited about that, can I?
Yeah, I think you should, I can understand why you would, I guess is the better way to put it. And, you look at this, you have to be realistic. The three teams that they've beaten are all one-win teams. They're all bad football teams.
Mm-hmm.
One of the two teams that they lost to is the second or third best team in the league in Houston. So, they're where you want them to be right now at 3-2. If you were asking for 5-0, you were being unrealistic. If you were expecting 0-4 or 0-5, you were being unrealistic. So, it's more about how are they getting there and what's happening when they're getting there. And to me, that's all not all been positive, but it's all been a lot more plus than minus. And so that's why I feel good about where they're at heading into this week. Now, the one thing, I mentioned this on the air last night, but I think the fans have to be aware of this as far as tomorrow. This is unlike any other game they're going to play this year. For all these teams, these trips are not easy. And it's not just that they spend 6 or 7 hours on a plane one day and again 2 days later or 6 days later, however they do it. It's about when you get there, you're in a different world. You're in a hotel. You don't have your home. You're starting at what will be 8:30 in the morning your time. Your whole clock is off this week. And it's the same for both teams. I'm not making an excuse for the Bears, but it just makes the playing of these games and the way teams perform in these games a lot different. And I think you have to be prepared for that, because if you don't see the same Bears team that you saw last week, forget who they're playing. And again, they're playing another bad team. But if you don't see the same team, it's not just because the Bears got worse or they stink. It's because this week is weird. And so, hopefully they'll play the same way they did last week. I'm glad that they went earlier this time instead of later, because that makes more sense to at least get your schedule settled down a little bit. But it is a very different game, and so it could look very different than they've looked the first 5 weeks.
If they lose, we set fire to the city. That's the only reasonable answer. Or not.
Well, I think most fans will set fire to the coaching staff, but that's a different story.
Okay. All right.
And some of the coaches, you have to have concerns about. Others, I think, are being treated unfairly. But again, that's just the reality of the way fans are going to react to a team in a rebuild.
Which coaches would you have concerns about?
Oh, I don't want to start naming names yet.
I want you to name names.
Well, the way they're playing right now, the offensive line is a mess, and it shouldn't be. They've added talent. So I think if you're going to start thinking about coaches, you have to look there. Other than that, where are they struggling? The slow start for Swift at running back, I suppose you could look there, although he's been better the last week or two, so maybe you give the running back's coach credit. But for the most part, again, even if they were 2-3, or certainly if they were 1-4, then I could be talking about the coaches. But these guys off to a 3-2 start right now, what they're trying to do, I'm not seeing anything from the coaches that concerns me enough that I would necessarily make a change there.
All righty then. Maybe next week. I can't wait for next week. We'll see if we can make a change. Hub, have a good day. Be well. Thank you.
All right, Steve. Take care, bud.
This broadcast, that's Hub Arkish, by the way. Senior NFL analyst for The Score. Try to get him every week. Love talking football with Hub. There you go. Chris Morgan. Hub's got you in his sights. Attention, listeners. this broadcast note. Tonight, it's a primetime Big Ten showdown on the score. Number 2 Ohio State visits number 3 Oregon. Pre-game coverage begins at 6, kickoff at 6:30, right here on the score and the Odyssey app. Take a break. But next, remember how earlier we compared Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams? We're going to do it with someone in Washington, D.C. Chris Russell, host at Odyssey's D.C. station, the Team 980. We're going to talk to him. What's the comparison like on his side of this discussion? I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. I suck so you don't have to. It's just what I do. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Indeed, I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage, I suck so you don't have to. It's a public service. I'm a giver, not a taker. It's just what we do here. Welcome in, welcome back to the show. We're going to go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And welcome to the show from the Team 980 in Washington, D.C., Chris Russell. He joins me on the score. Chris, thanks for taking time today. Chris?
Can you hear me, Steve?
Now I can.
There you go. Now you can hear me. You know, I should have realized that darn ding didn't click in. My bad on that. I was talking and you didn't hear me. No, I was going to say, thanks for having me. And, you know, a lot of my listeners would often say I suck. So I guess we're brothers in arms in that way.
There you go. There you go. We do it so other people don't have to. It's a public public service. We ask for nothing in return. Not even maybe a hug once in a while.
Maybe a slice of Chicago deep dish. There we go.
Play to the stereotype. There you go.
Exactly.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you is it started a couple weeks ago when you look at Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and you go, how come their guy's better? And the Bears passed on that guy. Mm-hmm. And we got this guy and he looks like he's never seen a football, doesn't know whether it's pumped up or stuffed. And why did the Bears pass on the offensive coordinator who was with Caleb all last year, would seem to know him better? And what are we even doing here? And people said, don't do it. Don't compare. Well, I'm happy to compare. I want to compare. I don't need to draw conclusions, but I want to compare to see where they are. And that's the discussion here. What is the discussion like with Daniels and Williams back there? And I understand it reached a different level this year with the Baltimore game. So
sure. Yeah. And it's going to obviously crank up in 2 weeks or a week and a half now, because the Chicago Bears are coming to Washington. So, a couple of things. I have all the respect in the world for Caleb Williams. A lot of the guys on Eberflus's coaching staff I worked with here in Washington, I know them real well. I just saw them at the Hall of Fame game in Canton. They were very, very, very optimistic about what they have in Caleb Williams. I think we have to keep in mind, just from my perspective, and granted, it's an outside perspective, and I haven't watched every snap and every, throw and every play and every game, you start off with Tennessee, good defense, right? And he struggled. But yet they came back. And then you start off with Houston on the road on a Sunday night. Really good defense. Really aggressive defense. That's really hard for anybody. Like Jaden Daniels, if you look, he started against Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay. Aggressive blitzing defense. And I don't want to say he played bad, but he ran for his life. He had 16 rushes. He had 2 rushing touchdowns, but one was in garbage time. Didn't really do anything as a thrower. And then it took maybe like half of week 2 against the Giants, another good front 7, Steve, to kind of kept cranking. Since that point, Jaden has been unbelievable. He's been great. He's been terrific on the run. He's been terrific as a passer, in the pocket, out of the pocket, everywhere in between. But I've also seen improvement from Caleb Williams, what I've seen. Now, again, I look forward to watching more and more. I look forward to watching tomorrow morning's game on my drive up to Baltimore before that Ravens-Commanders game. And then certainly, obviously, as we get ready for 2 weeks from now in Landover, when Caleb and Jaden go head-to-head.
Chris Russell is my guest. He's a host at Odyssey, the Team 980, Odyssey's D.C. station. We're talking Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels here. The Cliff Kingsbury element of this adds more reason for Bears angst if the Bears fans want to find it. Why do we have a why are we watching the Bears with an offensive coordinator and Shane Waldron, who had to be told to coach the players hard, had to be told by players to coach them hard, and told and didn't even have the first 15 plays scripted, according to a report from Stacey Dales. And now you're looking at, wait, Cliff Kingsbury knew Caleb Williams better, probably not just better than Shane Waldron, better than the Bears coaches and Wonks did. So the Cliff Kingsbury effect may have been, people have said he's running LSU's offense. That's why Jaden Daniels can look so good in this. He's comfortable, but that plays to your quarterback strength. What exactly is the Cliff Kingsbury effect on Daniels in DC's offense?
It's been great. I mean, and obviously the results bear that fruit as well. I'm not telling anybody that anybody doesn't know, but here's the one area, you know, I don't know, like Caleb and Cliff talked about how close they were, how they, you know, got along. Cliff wasn't there for, you know, forever, obviously. Wasn't there for Caleb's Heisman Trophy winning year. And certainly, again, he's working with Jaden Daniels for the first time. But I think, you know, I think what Cliff likes and what Cliff wants is what every good young quarterback needs to succeed. And, you know, Steve, you remember this probably, like when he came to Arizona out of, you know, college, out of, where was it, Texas Tech or wherever it was? Maybe it was at USC for a year. I can't even remember. You know, the first time, I guess I should say, when he was hired by Arizona, he was a spread guy, four or five receivers, and liked to run, didn't like to throw to the tight ends. He's completely, like, morphed his coaching career, play calling design. And I often say this, he is a manipulator, not by motion, which a lot of the Shanahan tree is, a lot of the young up-and-coming coaches and play callers in this game are. He is a manipulator by formation, and I think he's helped Jade a lot with a lot of, you want to call them exotic formations? I don't know if I call them exotic formations, but certainly interesting and certainly eye-opening formations. A lot of jet motion stuff, you know, eye candy that helps a young quarterback. He's helped them get into a groove. Again, I mentioned early in the year, you know, just like Caleb, and Caleb did not, you know, necessarily have this same path, if you will, but everything was horizontal. Everything was around the line of scrimmage. It wasn't until that week three game, Monday Night Football in Cincinnati, that I'm sure many saw, that Cliff really started to open up this offense and started to gas it and started to completely trust Jaden Daniels. And I'll give you another one. Here's how much they trust him. They're 8 for 8 on fourth downs. They're not all fourth and inches. They're not all fourth and ones. They're not all Jaden Daniels scrambles. They are Jaden Daniels scrambles, yes, and passes. And he is reading the field, and he is processing what Cliff Kingsbury is trying to get across. And, again, it helps when you have a young quarterback like DeAndre Swift starting to run the ball pretty well from what I can see. Maybe you have a different, you know, perspective. That is helping Caleb Williams. Well, guess what? Washington's been able to run the football with Austin Ekeler, Brian Robinson, and Jeremy McNichols. They've had three productive running backs. That helps a young quarterback out, regardless of who his play caller is.
We're talking with Chris Russell. He is a host at the Team 980 Odyssey Station in Washington, D.C. We're talking about Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. They'll play in a couple of weeks, but I always want to compare because people told me not to, so the contrarian, the oppositional kid that I am, I'm just comparing, and that's what we're doing. I ran down all the quarterbacks who have better passer ratings than Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams' arrow is pointing up, and that's great. He's trending up. But when, like, Aaron has a better, and he fires coaches better than he fires TD passes, when he's got a better rating, you have work to do. And he's doing it. You're right about the running game. And all the weapons are there, and it's trending up. And now they're playing a horrible defense that is begging to have 400 yards put up on it. And that's what we would hope to see if he's going to keep taking these steps. The way it breaks down for the Bears is playing a lot of bad teams. It's like a whole cupcake schedule, the way Alabama used to do it, and then the NCAA made them change. So they're playing the bad teams before they get into the division, and this has been a huge help. That's why he's on the upswing.
Right, but that was after playing the tough teams to start, right? Out of the conference. Am I remembering that right? Tennessee at Soldier Field week one, and they struggled, and then Houston on Sunday night. I mean, those are two really, really tough asks, right? So I think some of the numbers certainly affected by that. I know, the Rams game wasn't pretty at Soldier Field. I saw a bunch of that game. I think he's going to be good tomorrow morning, or I guess it's tomorrow afternoon out there or whatever. I hate these London games or international games. All I know is I can't watch it and concentrate because I'm driving. But the bottom line is, you know, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be good. Although Jacksonville's defense was a little stingy 2 weeks ago. Against Houston on the road, right? C.J. Stroud beat them in the last minute, and then obviously they won a game, granted, against Joe Flacco without Taylor in Indianapolis last week, so maybe it's not going to be so easy, but I would like to see Caleb, you know, open it up, just like I would like to see Jaden Daniels tomorrow, right? I mean, we talk about his running ability all the time around here. He had 11 carries for 82 yards, one of them coming on a 4th-and-3 scramble for 34 yards, so the numbers are a little bit wacky, but that's against the man defense in Cleveland. That's against a defense that turns its back to you. Well, Baltimore tomorrow, just for, again, comparison's sake, is not a man defense primarily. So he's probably not going to be able to use his legs as much. What he's going to have to do is throw against that secondary, which is not very good for Baltimore, as everybody has kind of seen, and expose them that way, using his legs to buy a little bit of time. And that's one area that I think, and I don't know how you process Caleb Williams. I think one of the things I've been most impressed about with Jaden Daniels, Steve, is how he operates on the run to his right. And I don't mean on the run full sprint. I mean drifting towards the sideline. We've seen great ones. We've seen Lamar Jackson. We've seen Josh Allen. We've seen Patrick Mahomes do this time and time again, where you think you have them, you think you have them strung out, you think they're not going to be able to throw the football on the run, and they keep their eyes up and they keep their hips flipped. And Jaden has done that time and time and time again. You guys will see it in 2 weeks, quite honestly, and he might need to do that against Montez, who I know pretty darn well, and that Bears defense.
Well, in 2 weeks, I know the Bears fans will be hoping that Magic Johnson has to issue an apology again for the last time they did that. I got a question before, a completely different subject, before I let you go, Chris. By the way, I'm talking with Chris Russell. He's a host at Odyssey's DC station, the Team 980. We're talking Commanders and Bears, much early pregame show, but it involves Montez Sweat. He has had an effect on the Bears defense where he gave him a pass rush. He made other players better, but his numbers are now being scrutinized. So 2 sacks in 5 games, that's not double-digit pace. And he's talked about he's gone back and looked at the T.J. Watts and Myles Garrett, and how do those guys do it when they're double-teamed and maybe a chip on top of that. So what do you scout Montez Sweat? Did he ever face this in Washington? Is this uncharted territory for being double team plus?
Yeah, well, maybe not double team plus, but certainly double teamed or chipped, rubbed, you know, and what have you. And yeah, that was a storyline at times. You know, Montez would run a little hot and cold. He would always, you know, be well graded or well looked upon in terms of, you know, hurries or, you know, all the other PFF stuff that they have, but the sacks just did not ever really come in big bunches. And that was with having Deron Payne, Jonathan Allen, 2 first-round Alabama defensive tackles next to him, and usually, not all the time because of injury, Chase Young on the other side. And yet the sacks really wouldn't come. As a matter of fact, what he did, Steve, in the second half of last year in Chicago, surprised us. I don't want to say surprised us all, but I mean, it opened. Okay. Like, look at what they did with him. Look at what he did with a new lease on life in Chicago. Why didn't he do that here? So he runs a little hot and cold. And, you know, the best way I could say it is Montez is always going to, I think Montez, you know, is going to always give you effort. I think, for the most part, I think he's always going to try. I don't think he's a lazy hot dog, you know, self-absorbed type guy. But the results are, you're going to have to live with a little bit of up and down. You're going to have to live with a little bit of inconsistency to tap into the best of Montez. And hopefully, just like he did after the trade and the contract extension last year, hopefully he kicks it into full gear, especially as he, you know, as they build out that defense a little bit and maybe get into more division games, as you mentioned.
Chris, I appreciate it. Thank you for running it down for us. It was very enlightening. Thank you.
Thanks. Good to talk to you.
All right, Chris Russell from the Team 980 in Washington, D.C., part of the Odyssey family. See, we not only compare because we're oppositional, but we bring in other voices to compare to. And there you go, and got into Montez Sweat. So maybe he has a Montez Sweat game. Maybe it's a Montez Sweat game tomorrow. Cover up, deodorize the holes in the secondary. We'll take a break. When we come back, you know, the part What Stacy Dales reported on Mully and Haw is worth bringing back. Hub had talked about, like, is there, what are we missing here? What are, you know what? We'll let you hear the way Stacy Dales explained it to Mike Mulligan and David Haw. You can make up your own mind. This is The Score. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage, top of the hour. We'll talk to Fat Tony. We'll explain that later. But for now, we've talked about it during the show, and I brought it up that about Shane Waldron and the Come to Jesus meeting that the players demanded, and some news was broken by Stacy Dales on The Score on Mully and Haw show yesterday. So here's an EP version. Here's our extended play version of what happened, and you can make up your own mind about, did the reporting leave you some questions? Did it seem solid in the way she reported it? And what you might think of Shane Waldron and how he approached this season. Here it is.
One of the things that Mercedes did is he went to Matt Eberflus and he said, you got to coach us. We have to be coached. I'm a 19-year vet in the NFL, and if you can coach me, you got to coach these rookies. Like, you, there has to be something that shifts. So all the offensive captains went to Flus, and he then said, you guys need to go to Shane Waldron, and you need to tell him this. Well, that was an amazing meeting, and one of the things I discovered is they didn't have a first 15. So they were going in with ideas to start their games, but not really having, I mean, the first 15 to 20, Kyle Shanahan goes 25, so that's like, you know, priority calls that you can go to that are so scripted and rehearsed. It's very error-free football. Kevin O'Connell does 20 in Minnesota. Well, they've started now doing a first 15, and I think it has brought the offensive line together with the run game, together with, you know, the cohesiveness with the perimeter game. And now you're seeing a little bit more of, I don't know if you guys would agree, a little bit more polish as we enter week 6. Mm-hmm. And I think just that helps with the decisiveness of the quarterback, who has had to learn the speed of the NFL, which is typical for a rookie, and adjust on the fly with 5 seconds at the line of scrimmage. So I just think dialogue has been such a big part of improvement for Chicago offensively. And gosh, you know, the defense is happy about it.
So I'm sorry. So you said that they started the season without any plays mapped out for them, like teams have done since, I don't know, Paul Brown. That surprises mm-hmm. me. And they only just started yeah. doing it after the players' meeting we're talking about.
After the Colts game, it's my understanding yeah. as I talked to Mercedes Lewis that, you know, Shane was more so looking for, like, he had suggestions and, you know, this is new for him too. He's got a rookie quarterback. And so I think, like, what can he handle may have gone into that without necessarily overwhelming. But, you know, I was shocked by it, to be honest with you, Mully. I was really surprised because it's almost vital for so many, you know, for these quarterbacks to have, like, Kevin O'Connell calls it a priority call sheet. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't follow it sequentially. Right. So as he explained it to me last week, because I had their game last week, it might be, we're going to go the first, you know, the second, number two and number three on the priority call sheet of 20, and then we're going to jump to 17. And it's all based on down and distance. It's all based on coverage. What coverage are they in? What formation are they in defensively? And now you've repped those things all week, and you give that list to the players, and you can play kind of error-free football because there should be really no mistake made. I mean, that's where you get 11 on the same page. So I don't want to over-dramatize it, but I do think it's interesting, mm-hmm. and I think that it has helped the Bears to be have a little bit more offensive conviction, which has helped their rookie quarterback.
So we're not going to over-dramatize it, but I do think it's interesting. And I wonder, learning mm-hmm. that, discovering that this week as you're around the team, does it give you more or less confidence in Shane Waldron? Because that seems to be something that you would come into the season already doing, but the fact that he pivoted gives you confidence that he can adjust.
And more, absolutely more. Mercedes, my takeaway, it was such a productive meeting because you know, you have the four captains offensively. Forget the defense for a second. You have Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, and Mercedes Lewis. Having this really accepting, that was the word he used, accepting conversation of like, oh yeah, I like that. I like that. Okay, I accept that. I accept this. A lot of accountability. How can we, how can we be solution oriented? And so when you're able to have those conversations, and that's why Mercedes, like if you're wondering if you're a Bears fan listening right now, like why is he on, he doesn't play a whole lot. Well, he's a basically another coach who's been around a bevy of quarterbacks, and he's one of the smartest people I've ever talked to, you know, in life. So I just think for him to start all this with going to Flus and then, you know, and what would you do, right? You got a rookie quarterback. Do you think Caleb was ready to go in week two and be like, you know, he knows that he has a lot to learn. He told us that. He's like, he's got a ways to go in terms of his knowledge of this thing we call the NFL. But I really think it was productive. I think Shane probably was trying to figure out like how to coach the rookie phenom, right? Like, so I think that, you know, there was some gray area on both sides, and now you come together and there's a little bit more clarity in the middle, which is, I think, why we're seeing some improvements offensively and more complementary football with the running backs involved.
I think we need to chat about this for a second. I think that people need to understand, listeners need to understand that scripted plays, it's not like you run your first 15 plays, as you're talking about with Kevin O'Connell. What you do is you have the word that was used to me is probing, probing plays. So in other words, you have plays that you've practiced depending on the formation, depending on your how you want to present a play, and you can change it based on personnel groupings, et cetera. But you want to see how teams are reacting when you do this, do that, and get a feel for whatever their adjustments are going to be. So you're probing them with practice plays that you're using, and you need a list of you know, most teams have at least 15 of them. I just find that incredible, even if you don't know what the quarterback knows, that you wouldn't have a certain group of plays put in for every game based on what a guy is comfortable with, what they're going to, and that you wouldn't be prepared to use that to open a game. I don't care what a guy knows or doesn't know. It's just, it's almost like it's almost done everywhere in the league.
So that was a discussion. Mully and Haw with Stacey Dales. She talked about Shane Waldron didn't start with the first 15 plays or any group of scripted plays. And if you heard the pregame show earlier, Olin Krutz on with Patrick Manley and Mike Mulligan, and Olin Krutz said he used those as a cram session for what he was going to do the next, and he got it on Friday or some at worst Saturday. And that's what he was studying Sunday morning when he got up. And that's what he could help the coaches with, what he was seeing compared to what they were seeing. Shane Waldron didn't do the 15. So that's what it sounded like. You can make up your own mind. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk more Bears Jaguars with someone in Jacksonville. We'll talk with Fat Tony. You got to talk to Fat Tony. Anybody named Fat Tony. This is Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.